Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Influence with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Now, for the first time in decades, the world last year retreated in progress towards the Sustainable Development Goals. In the headlines here, we've been discussing vaccine inequality and the profound impact that that will have on socioeconomic recovery in low and lower middle income countries. We know that many different stakeholders need to work in concert for global recovery to happen in a significant way. Today, we're going to find out whether business schools engage with sustainable development goals, specifically how INSEAD is doing. Let's hear from INSEAD Dean Ilyan Mihov. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Michelle.
Good to have you here with us. So I understand that one third of the courses at INSEAD are now contributing towards the SDGs. Was that the result of a defined target?
Well, the target was to start introducing sustainability more and more in the curriculum. We actually started in 2017. We reviewed the curriculum and we introduced a required set of required courses on business and society. So every student had to go through these courses. But in addition to this, we have started introducing in each one of the required courses materials on sustainable development goals or issues related to business and society. I think that's where the world is heading. So we have to respond to that.
Now, you spoke recently, Dean, at a platform that empowers female entrepreneurs, a platform that INSEAD has been a strategic partner with since 2006. I'm talking about the 2021 Cartier Women's Initiative Awards. Mm-hmm. And you spoke on the topic opening doors from mentorship to sponsorship. Tell us, as an enabler, what has been key to being able to do that at INSEAD?
Well, I think that for us in general, diversity, not just gender, has been part of our DNA since 1959 when INSEAD started in Fontainebleau. The school was founded with the with the idea to promote peace and prosperity by bringing people together from all over Europe. It was started as an idea to create peace among warring nations. So the Germans, the Brits, the French, instead of fighting with each other, could actually do business together. Throughout the next 60 years, diversity has been everywhere at INSEAD, where it is national ethnic diversity and gender diversity started in 1967 when the first two women joined INSEAD. So for us, this is part of our DNA. This is who we are. We have 90 nationalities in our programs, in our MBA programs, and we are now fighting to get closer to a gender balance. And we have made some progress. So today we graduate 350 women with an MBA degree, which makes us in the top three schools in the world. But we're not there yet because we want to make sure that every obstacle, every impediment that women face in their progress, in their career, is dealt with. So we try to go to gender balance by popularizing MBA as a good degree for women, by creating more scholarships for women, and in general for increasing the diversity in the school.
So there's a long history to draw on when it comes to diversity and inclusion efforts. As you say, it's part of your DNA for INSEAD from the very beginning, the founding of the school. I wonder if you can single out from that long history some examples of diversity efforts that have really worked for INSEAD.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I think that scholarships work a lot because especially in the gender dimension, we have noticed that sometimes women are less willing to take on a loan. They view it as a risky investment when you have to borrow in order to do your MBA. So a little bit of support, financial support, goes a long way in increasing the participation of women in the application pool even. So I think that this is very important. The other thing that I think it works really well, mm-hmm, is popularizing through role models. In fact, a few years back, two of my colleagues, Lucia DiCaprio and Maria Guadalupe, wrote a paper where they studied why women sign up less for coding classes, programming classes. And they did an experiment where to one group of women, they sent an invitation to follow a coding class, mm-hmm. just with the information about the class. And the other group received the same email plus a story about a role model. And in the second group, the signing up was actually twice as high as in the first group, because they had this role model. And when you think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense. When you think about the business world, today we still have 95% of the CEOs of the S&P 500 companies or Fortune 500 companies are men. So for many of the role models are there. You don't have to even think about it. But in the business world, for many women, still it is not clear that it is a good career and, you know, women can be successful. So we had this campaign called Limitless, mm-hmm. where we featured some of our successful alumni, some of our female alumni who actually told their stories, and you could see how you can create a very meaningful and very impactful career after an MBA.
That has worked well. In fact, we featured some of the women from your Limitless campaign on our program. We wanted to amplify, you know, what that campaign was doing, which is terrific, because women need to see how other women are making it in the world. And that can make a difference in terms of whether they or not they sign up to invest in themselves. That's so fascinating, really. Taking a step back, Dean, what are your thoughts on the impact that COVID has had on efforts that work towards diversity and inclusion?
Well, unfortunately, it had a negative effect. You mentioned in the beginning, in general, the progress towards the goals in 2030 got a setback through COVID in many different dimensions. So I recently saw a report from the U.S. National Women's Law Center that showed a really, you know, striking figures. Out of 100 people who dropped out of the labor force, 80% were women. So out of 100 people, 80 will be women, 20 will be men. So the ratio is 4-1. And that's really scary when you think about all the progress that the world has been making towards inclusion, that a shock like this can set us back so much. Many people are concerned about the effect of downsizing falling disproportionately towards women or minorities relative to the majority. We have actually done our own study at INSEAD, and 57% of our alumni were very concerned that COVID-19 will negatively affect the gender balance, or actually was already negatively affecting gender balance. So unfortunately, we have seen these setbacks. Hopefully with the recovery, we'll be able to regain all this lost ground.
So with COVID, increasing poverty and unemployment, that's made the climb towards gender equality even more uphill. Do you think enough organizations understand the ripple effects of inclusion, which, by the way, was a theme for the Cartier Initiative Awards? It touched on this idea of ripple effects. So why is it that more organizations don't seem to get it, to understand the ripple effects of inclusion?
Well, I think that I'm willing to think in a more positive terms. Actually, I think that more and more organizations are seeing the positive effects, and they're working to improve diversity and inclusion. It is today part of the mainstream discourse, and I don't know exactly why it is coming on the agenda today. Is it because, you know, the new generation is very passionate about this, mm-hmm. or is it because all of the employees feel that, you know, unfair practices or biased practices will not be tolerated? But we can see across organizations that more and more organizations are thinking about this. I mean, we have done some studies. So one of our colleagues, Professor Zoe Kinias, Associate Professor of Organizational Behavior, and she's actually leading our gender diversity initiative, proposed a few actions. So she has done research on this. So she calls this the behavioral design-based approach, mm-hmm. which is advocated by Iris Bonnet. She's the academic dean of Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And this design-based approach basically requires clearer, fairer rules and systems to be implemented in organizations so that things are transparent and clear. And instead of trying to persuade managers to remove stereotypes about race, gender, and so on, which I even don't know exactly how you can do, companies should actually increase and improve the formality of the hiring process. So there are clear criteria. There is little room for prejudices and biases. The other things that Zoe was doing, which was also very interesting, I think is called self-affirmation or psychological interventions of this type, which requires, it's a very simple tool. It requires that people think about their values before they start a task. So they have to write down about their core personal values. And when they start with these later on, actually they show much less bias and much less stereotypical thinking rather than if you just go into this. And that's just such a simple thing to do. In this session that we had with Cartier, the panel discussion from mentorship to sponsorship, mm-hmm. there were a lot of really great ideas. But I think that today what is missing in the organizations is that the willingness is there. I don't think that, I'm sure that there are some companies that are not willing to do that, but most of the companies that at least we deal with and I have been talking to, they want to do something about this because they realize that it is good for the company, it is good for the employees, it is good for the shareholders, it's good for everybody. Sometimes there is lack of understanding what is needed, what is mentorship, what is sponsorship. Mm-hmm. And still many companies think about mentorship of, okay, every woman that joins, minority, new recruit, they have to be mentored how to deal with the organization. But mentorship is not enough. Sometimes, you reach a plateau. In the beginning, it is helpful, but then you reach a plateau and you don't move forward. Sponsorship is a different issue. Sponsorship is actually the advocation, the active involvement with the person, with the woman, with the minority person in the group and actively championing them, uncovering their strengths and promoting their strengths in the organization. And sometimes I can tell you from my own experience, you're a little bit reluctant to, you have to give responsibility to the persons, not just encourage them, but you have to tell them, okay, now you are the one who will be leading this organization or you'll be leading this department, then you have these responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And often there are reluctance to do that. There's a little bit of fear. So doing these things is much more important than just encouraging, improve your skills in this and that and mentoring.
Such an interesting distinction, Dean. We could have you back on the show for just a session on the difference between, mentorship and sponsorship. That's fascinating. To the bigger question, though, for listeners who are just tuning in and they're thinking, I want to lay a foundation for inclusivity within my organizations. What do you say to leaders in terms of where to start and what to think about in terms of guiding them on this journey?
The class that graduated this year in July, our MBA class, had an amazing speaker for their graduation. His name is Tidjane Thiam. He's from Ivory Coast, graduated in 1988 from INSEAD, and went on, he was the CEO of Prudential, then the CEO of Credit Suisse. Always, they call him the first black CEO of a FTSE 100 company, the first black CEO of Swiss Bank and so on. So he has gone through a lot of great achievements. He was in the government of Ivory Coast earlier before that. And he's an amazing, amazing person. But, what he said is just resonates so much with me. One of the things that he said during his speech, he said, talent is everywhere. What is missing is opportunity. So when you think about this and what the leaders listening to this broadcast could do, it's actually give opportunities and give opportunities, advocate for inclusion, for equitable inclusion of the employees, and hire these people that sometimes might not be like you, and you might be a bit uncomfortable in having them around you. Mm-hmm. And then, as I mentioned earlier, clarity and consistency is very important. So a clear and consistent definition, for example, of success in the name of championing diversity and inclusion is very important. So I would say, just give opportunities. Look at your people. They are talented. There is talent everywhere in the world. Our responsibility is to give opportunity to these people.
So what are the responsibilities you're parceling out? Are you really engaging with this goal of inclusivity, or is it just, you know, a motherhood statement, so to speak? I want to move on to, we're running out of time, Dean, but we will have you. Will you come back on, Dean? You're such an inspirational figure and you have so much to share.
I'll be happy to come on. I love your radio station. And
great,
you know, we can talk about a lot of things.
We can. I just want to have a whole series called Conversations with the Dean. By the
way. I'm not sure how many listeners you will have, but anyways.
A lot of people want to head back to business school, Dean, truly. All right, before we let you go, there are some amazing female entrepreneurs making change happen. And speaking of inclusion, the Cartier Women's Initiative is all about empowering female entrepreneurs. And INSEAD has been a strategic partner since 2006. And some of these female entrepreneurs making change happen, I mean, from data-based cashless credits to smallholder farmers to solving the problem those of us have swallowing big pills. Just incredible. I wonder, Dean, if you could take us on a tour of some of the 8 laureates that the Cartier Women's Initiative has singled out from over 800 applicants.
Yeah, I think it actually, so a little bit about the Cartier Women's Initiative. It started in 2006. So Cartier, everybody knows Cartier, INSEAD and McKinsey, we actually joined forces in 2006 to promote women-run, women-owned businesses and to give a little bit of a boost to these entrepreneurs. It is unbelievable when you go to this event and you see, it's exactly what Tijan was talking about. Talent is everywhere. And what Cartier Initiative was doing was giving the opportunity to these talented women from literally all over the world. And I must tell you, in the last 8 years as a dean, I've been attending all of these award ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And every time you're sitting there mesmerized. So let me just tell you about a few of those. And you know, I think that we can have an episode just on this, because women are just unbelievable. So this year, there was this company, I think it's called Maya, by Senabu Diang from Mali. Mm-hmm. That, you know, she noticed that a lot of the vegetables, a lot of the groceries, the produce from the local producers were just wasted or thrown away at the end of the day or the end of the week. So she created a company in order to get these products from the local producers and to create manufactured food made exclusively with local agricultural products. And since, I think, in the last 4 years, she has processed something like 78 tons of vegetables and cereals, and one third come directly from the partner farmers. And again, it increases the income. It's a direct way of fighting poverty in Mali, which, as you know, is one of the poorest countries in the world. Mm-hmm. Then there is a story of Rebecca Hui from the United States. Her company, I think, is called Roots Studio. Mm-hmm. And what she's looking at is to go to the rural communities globally and to try to digitize their cultural heritage into intellectual property for licensing. Because very often, you know, we use things that they look beautiful, but they could have, you know, Aborigines origin or, you know, the Native American origins and so on. But they're not, people do not actually get any rewards for the intellectual property that they have created, and we're just using it for free. So she is using, I think it's about mostly in Asia, she works mostly in Asia, 2,200 artists and trying to get, you know, intellectual property. Then the profits are split between the community and the contributing artist. And again, this is really a great way of first making the world a better place by recognizing these contributions from the local artists, but also increasing the income of these rural communities. And then the last one, because I know we're running out of time, is Andrea Barber. She's from Spain. And Andrea's company works directly in the field of renewable energy and one of these key sustainable development goals of reducing climate change and carbon dioxide emissions. So she noticed that designing solar plants is actually, it's complicated task. It requires a lot of engineering, and sometimes companies might be reluctant or communities might be reluctant to do this because of the difficulty in designing this. So she created a software called PV Design. It's cloud-based, where you basically upload the picture, the location of the solar plant that you want to design, the kind of equipment you want, and so on. So then the software actually, in a few seconds, you can download the entire engineering documentation required for the project. So Rated Power calculated that if only one of the 200 projects started with PV design were installed annually, the energy generated would be 10,000 gigawatts, which translates into enough energy to supply more than 3 million households, even in remote off-the-grid communities. So again, you can go on and on. All of these projects are really fantastic, and I'm so proud that INSEAD is involved in this. So what we do actually, just to finish with this, is that once we identify the finalists, we bring them to INSEAD. We identify 24 finalists. So we bring them to INSEAD, to our INSEAD Social Entrepreneurship Program, because we want to improve their skills in terms of managing the company, creating plans, and so on. So they go through the process and they create, not only that they learn something, but they become part of an amazing network of social entrepreneurs from around the world.
Yes, we've spoken to some of them and they never fail to talk about the network effects that, you know, being part of INSEAD has brought to their lives and their business. You know, like the best of educators, Dean, you have stretched our minds in terms of possibilities this morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
We've been learning how business schools engage with these sustainable development goals with INSEAD's Dean Ilian Mihov. I'm Michelle Martin.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.